Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to today's broadcast. I hope you're having a fantastic day wherever you are and whatever you may be doing. That is, of course, unless you happen to be involved in violent crime or global jihad. I do always make that particular caveat because, let's face it, if you're involved in that and you're having a good day, then some very innocent people are having a very bad day. So, besides that, you know, you're just not a nice person, okay? All right, let's get on with today's matters. We are scheduled to be very busy today, and hopefully everybody will come through. First off, here in just a few short moments, I'm scheduled to be joined by the Senate Majority Leader here in Tennessee, the Tennessee State Senator Mark Norris, and we'll be talking about his okay, so now I'm reconnected. I was not connected brilliantly. This is just awesome. I really don't understand the circumstances that was amazing. You know, it's not as if issue hasn't been ongoing and that they have had opportunity and time to correct it. And there is absolutely nothing wrong on my end. I'm following all the rules, all the specifics, all the updates, all the compliance. It's just very frustrating. And so we do what we can do as best we can. I know a lot of hosts have been having issues. And it is, well, it's pretty ridiculous that this kind of issues persist, especially if you have guests that are going to be on your show. Because after all, how can you possibly have a show if you don't have the guests? Nobody's in the chat room. The connection has been lost one time. Doing the direct connect to avoid all strange possible issues with this whatever conflict it is that they've had here with Skype. And that seems to be the issue that they've had. Either Skype did an update that's now conflicting with the BTR platform, or the BTR platform did an update that's now no longer working with Skype. But either way, it is an issue, and it's one that you would think BTR would be spending extra time and effort to correct, because they know how common the Skype hookup has become in trying to keep guests on air. It's a matter of convenience for a lot of folks. I mean, it's not something that it's not something that's a minor deal, ultimately, is what I'm saying. I mean, a lot of guests will call in with their cell phones. That's true. But then a lot of guests use the convenience of Skype. A lot of listeners like to call in and listen to Skype. And from what I understand, listening to the show hasn't been an issue on Skype. Again, that may only be a partial issue. My audio last week, it was recorded. It was hit or miss with who was actually got to listen to it. And these are people who have taken additional steps to try and get their audio quality worked out. It's just very disappointing. If my guest had called in today at the time he was supposed to, then I have no way of knowing if he could have even heard me as we were talking back and forth. And that would be embarrassing. And as far as it's concerned right now, if Senator Norris was confused about the time for his interview starting. I suppose if he forgot that it was Eastern time that we discussed and he tries calling in about 5 minutes after 3 Central time, well, then he's going to be calling in about the time that Mark Callahan was scheduled to be talking. So then I've got two people on at the same time. And how embarrassing will that be if they can't hear me? I mean, this is utterly, utterly ridiculous. I may have to go in here and change the name of today's show to Tim Tap Gripes About BTR. And I know that the technicians are doing their jobs. They're doing the best they can. Obviously, this is not an easy fix. So I don't mean to just sit here and berate the folks that work for BTR, and I don't mean to berate anyone else. It's just very frustrating as a host and can be very embarrassing if you are someone who's trying to take your show to the next level. All right, now I've got an email from support at BTR. Thanks for taking the time to contact them. Team has received the email. I'll get back to you as soon as we can. If you have more details you'd like us to consider before then, reply to this email. Best regards, Sherry, technical support. Okay. They've updated their learning center with how-to and show design guides as well. Well, that's good to know. And, thanking me for my patience. I don't know what else to say at this point. Mary is still trying to help me out here. She's messaging me on Facebook now, so I just don't know what else to do. Hopefully we can figure this out. I mean, the microphone seems to be working fine. There's nothing, I don't know, maybe... I just don't know. Okay, wow, that was odd. I'm getting weird message noises now. Just don't know. It's crazy. Anyway, on the off chance that people can actually hear me, I suppose I should continue on with some semblance of a show. And then I can edit the broadcast later, I suppose. It's just not very pleasant. I mean, I can try all kinds of things, and they're just, I don't know. And now Microsoft Edge is trying to take over my computer. So, I'm having all kinds of fun at the moment. I'm very nearly 30 minutes into the broadcast, and I don't know if anybody can hear me. I do know that according to everything I'm looking at, I should be green across the board. I don't know what else to do to accommodate this. And Mary had trouble last week getting in. I don't know what else to do. It's frustrating. Maybe I'll get something... Maybe I'll get something here in a little bit to start working. In the meanwhile, thanks for bearing with me. It's pretty ridiculous. That's pretty ridiculous. Anyway, what do you do? Okay. Now, basically, I'm staying on the air in case one of my guests calls in. We can go ahead and do the interview, and then I can download it, re-up the rest of the show, and do whatever it takes to make it right. In the meanwhile, if you can hear me, then thank you for staying with me through this glitch. I just don't know what else to do. So I've contacted the BTR, and I have double-checked everything else on my end. There is very little left here. I just, I don't know. It's very frustrating. So hopefully somebody will hop in the chat room here in a second and let me know if they can hear anything now. Mary is still in contact with me. She's listening to somebody else's show now, but she's saying that there was a similar issue with their broadcast early on, but it's working there now. So maybe whatever it is, they will get fixed. Otherwise, I have very little option but to bag the broadcast. If we get past 4 o'clock and nothing's working, then we'll do exactly that. In the meanwhile, since we are still here, and if you can hear me, you're probably getting tired of hearing me grumbling about this, maybe we should still talk about some of the issues from this week. We, of course, saw more information about the Orlando shooter. Evidently, every indication around involving him now is that he himself was most likely homosexual or at the very least bisexual. Now, that doesn't matter to me and probably shouldn't matter to you either, except for the fact that understanding in the precepts of Islam, to be a good Muslim, he would be seeking some form of forgiveness. Keep in mind that homosexuality is looked upon as a sin in a good number of religions, and the spiritual component of the world domination philosophy of Islam also includes that in their spiritual tenet. If his father found out, then I'm sure his father would have put pressure on him to find some way to atone, some way to get forgiveness from Allah. If his father hadn't found out, then he would probably still be feeling this confliction about it. Don't know that confliction is a real word, but hey. I don't know what was going on in this guy's head. Ultimately, he's a bit twisted. He had some issues. Most people who are willing to go into a crowded nightclub and start shooting, regardless of who's inside of it, probably does. I can't imagine too many scenarios where they don't. But to say that there isn't a scenario somewhere where that's a possibility, that might be overstating matters a bit. Ultimately, it doesn't matter if he was gay or bisexual and looking for this forgiveness. It matters that we should not be blaming the NRA. We cannot look at gun control as a solution because gun control has proven itself time and time and time again to be completely useless and a waste of effort. By now, if you haven't heard the stats and statistics brought forth by a multitude of pro-Second Amendment supporter people, then you've been living under a rock, and I probably don't have enough time to bring you up to speed. I, in fact, would probably have to do three-hour shows in order to bring you up to speed with everything that I've seen in just this past week. So I know you've probably been inundated with it, too. If you bothered to take the time to check any of these, you will find a multitude of information, including the fact that even with four of the worst cities with murder per capita in the world, the United States doesn't even fall within the top 100 officially recognized nation states with murder per capita, despite the fact that we are number one in gun ownership per capita. The idea, the notion, the very concept that gun ownership or the availability of guns changes this scenario, that taking away someone's Second Amendment right will somehow make you safer, well, not only is it asinine, but it just doesn't hold up to any real scrutiny. It's an emotional issue, and people like to play with their emotions. Every politician that's looking to push their agenda forward wants to take advantage of your emotions. Now, that's a game that gets played on both sides of the aisle, even by non-progressives. They see an opportunity to get emotion and fire and passion behind them. They see the opportunity to pursue a movement. They want to take advantage of that. And unfortunately, that's part of politics, which is why we always must try. And I say try because it's hard. I find myself not able to do it all the time, but we always must try to divorce our emotions when we're looking for solutions. Knee-jerk reactions often lead to very poor choices. The left keeps pushing gun control for a reason, because they know they have some soft-minded individuals who seem to have difficulty understanding the very nature of gun control. They don't seem to understand that they are, in fact, despite the best of intentions, being used as useful idiots to help move an agenda to disarm the American public. Whenever your government tells you you don't need a gun, then you need a gun. Probably more than one, and a lot of ammo to go with. We have to learn to stand together and to trust each other, and we have to start educating our friends and neighbors. Folks that listen to this show on a regular basis, I have no doubt you're well informed and you understand truth of the situation. But I also guarantee you, and if you've been watching any of the videos of Hillary supporters, of Bernie Sanders supporters, of Black Lives Matter supporters out on the street, not the leadership, but rank and file members out at various protests, then it becomes painfully obvious very quickly that a good number of these people are simply ignorant. Not stupid, uninformed. They lack basic knowledge to truly understand the circumstances that they're looking at. Now, all that having been said, the important thing to remember is a lot of these people don't want to be informed. You ever hear the phrase, ignorance is bliss? For some folks, that is exactly the truth for them. And they prefer to be ignorant because they're happy hanging out with their little friends that tell them the things that they want to hear. And so in return, they tell their little friends the things that they want to hear. And so they embrace the little blue pill, drinking it down with a good dose of Kool-Aid the whole time, in the back of their minds, knowing something's not quite right. but in the process, calling other people out for their perceived ignorance simply because they don't agree with you and your friends. When I hear people talk about how Donald Trump said he's sending Mexicans back to Mexico, so he's racist across the board, period, in the discussion, I want somebody to challenge those people. And usually when I hear that, it's on a recording or video or on a news report. So I'm not there to do it myself, but I want someone to challenge these people on it because, first of all, at least publicly, all I've ever heard Donald Trump say is that he wants to send the illegal Mexicans back. And unfortunately, in a move that would not be consistent with current U.S. law, he wants to let them get back in line so they can come back to the states. Current law states that if you are found here illegally, then you're shipped out and you're not eligible to return for having broken our immigration law. Now, that doesn't make you racist. It means that you understand to at least some extent some of the issues involved with the complexities of immigration. I have never heard Donald Trump make a racist statement towards Americans of color. I've heard him make a few statements that sounds a bit misogynistic, and there may have been a little of that behind those statements. But I've never heard him make a racist statement towards American citizens. And in fact, saying you're going to build a wall and saying we're going to take criminals from other countries that are here illegally and send them home, well, that in and of itself is not racist. You want to imply racism based on how he said it. Well, you know, sometimes you do have to learn to read between the lines if you really want to know and really understand what somebody's trying to tell you. But sometimes you spend so much time trying to read between the lines that you're starting to get a whole different message that was not the message being sent. People want to believe that Donald Trump is racist because, well, he's certainly not talking like the Democrats that they're used to dealing with. Donald Trump has his issues, but honestly, I haven't seen anything that makes me say he's a racist. Just haven't. Now, if you have some secret information that you know about that no one else does, then please, by all means, step forth and share the information. All right, Mary says that the audio is working now, so that's great. Thanks, Mary, for letting me know. I'm not a racist that I can see. So now Mary's in agreement with Donald Trump thing. And yeah, Donald Trump is a businessman, and he may be misogynistic. Yeah, easy for me to say. He may have a superiority complex, and he may look down at women just a little bit. Although, again, I think it just depends on which women you're talking about. I think that Donald Trump does have an issue with wanting to just swing for the fences and take cheap shots at whoever he thinks has taken cheap shots at him. I would like to see a presidential candidate be a little more controlled in his approach. I've heard people comment this past week that Donald Trump didn't talk enough about the gays, and that's exactly how they put it, when he was talking about the Orlando shooter. He just talks about the Muslims. He's going to stop letting Muslims in, and that's racist. Well, no. First of all, being a Muslim is not being part of a race. There are a multitude of races that have allowed themselves to be brainwashed to the point of joining Islam. So that's not racist. Now, is it being a bit bigoted? Not if you understand the threat. Not if you understand the dangers. If you're a regular listener to the Underground Professor, then you know he has explained it just recently very well, the fact that radical Islam isn't the problem. You know, Barak gave us that awesome little lecture about how using the phrase radical Islam is just a talking point. Well, it's a talking point, yes, because it's protective language. It's an effort to try and protect the Muslim. The bottom line is, it's the radical Muslims, much like the professor said, that aren't engaging in Sharia practices, that want to live a life in peace and get along with their neighbors and not feel the need to carry out jihad against the infidel. Mary in the chat room says that she thinks that Donald holds women in high esteem, but for the wrong reasons. You're probably right there too, Mary. We look at this problem from the standpoint of not wanting to offend people, and we want to be true to the very nature of the founding of the country, which was based on freedom of religion. But again, so many of you have been lied to about the fact that Islam is not a true religion. If Islam was founded yesterday, everybody would be talking about what a horrible death cult it was. It would not credit, never be recognized as a religion. It simply wouldn't. When the very notion is printed that the only guarantee to get into heaven is to die a martyr, then that should tell you that there is an issue at its very heart. The Prime Minister of Turkey has said repeatedly, along with some of the other high-ranking members of the Turkish government, using the term radical Islam is offensive to Sharia-compliant Muslims because, as he said, there is no radical Islam. There is just Islam. Now, us as kofirs, infidels in their eyes, we can't understand, we can't begin to fathom the very essence of how deeply rooted the idea of killing those who will not convert, of killing those who commit certain sins, even if they are good Muslims otherwise. The notion of an honor killing seems abhorrent to us. So many Americans, many Westerners, because it's not just an American phenomenon, we see it in Canada, we see it through Western Europe, we see where London actually has a Muslim mayor now, and he's already began censorship within the city. And that was one of the stories I wanted to talk about as time permitted. And if we end up with no calls with both the guests today, then we will get into that in the second hour, which actually is coming up pretty quickly now, as there's only about 11 minutes left in this hour. And what a great hour it's been trying to deal with technical glitches and getting nowhere, and me mostly just babbling complaints. Mary in the chat room says that Allah demands you die for him, whereas Jesus died for you, which is one of those really great points in the differences between the two ideologies. Christianity is an ideology that's based on the faith of a supreme God who sent his son, part of himself, here to take on and pay the sin debt for all of us so that we could be redeemed, so we could live in grace. Allah is indifferent. He doesn't care. He's not easily impressed. The only thing that Allah really, really gets excited about is you go out and kill a bunch of infidels. In the chat room, the comment's just been made that Allah is Satan. In a lot of ways, if he's not, he sure as heck is awful close. Close enough for me. There's a high percentage of self-described Muslims who've never read the Quran and who've never seen a hadith. I wonder exactly how many imams that are preaching their messages of hate in the mosque across the Western world have really read very much of it either. I mean, the majority of self-described Muslims are people who have memorized a few verses from the Quran, and most of them have copies of the Quran, but they rarely read it. Of course, I would dare say that if we went across America, we could probably take a poll of people describing themselves as Christian who've read very little, if any, of the Bible. Now, this is only an issue, however, if you actually get involved in a discussion about your faith. You need to be able to explain to people why you believe what you believe. You need to be able to respond when somebody says, according to the Christian faith, women are supposed to submit to their husbands. Well, yeah, there is the verse that says that, but as I recall, that verse also continues, and the men are to love their wives as they do the Lord. Which means you hold these women in reverence. It means they're special to you in your life. It means that you don't just treat them like property, as the people making the statement about Christianity would like to insist. And that's, I choose that particular verse because I've heard that one used a lot. And I've very rarely heard a good response. But here's the bottom line. Don't stand in front of me and call me out because I'm a Christian and because you're agnostic or an atheist and you want to start quoting Bible verses at me when you haven't really read it. You've, again, just memorized a few verses. Memorizing a few verses can be very dangerous, and it can be used in very negative ways. And if you choose correctly, it can certainly make very negative things sound not quite so negative. In fact, maybe even sound good. Every American citizen should read the Quran, the Hadith, the Sharia, and should understand what you're being told, what your good Muslim neighbors have been taught since they were small children. Every single one of them, they aren't terrorists, but some of them, because of what they are taught, could easily become terrorists or could support terrorist activity, thinking that it's okay. The Orlando shooter, if he had survived and had been taken into custody and then had been tried in a Sharia court, would be a free man today because they wouldn't have hesitated to have that trial. They would have moved forward quickly. This man would have been considered a hero in the faith because he was living the faith. He was out in the name of Allah, dealing with homosexuals. Now, I have every reason to believe he had no intentions of coming out of there alive, despite the fact that he tried to buy body armor There is a report floating around, and I posted it on the Tap Into the Truth Facebook page, that when he tried to buy the body armor and then tried to buy some other weapons and was turned down those sales because he was acting suspicious, that he actually immediately got on the phone after being told the body armor he was looking for was not available. He was speaking in, quote, a foreign language, which is most likely Arabic. So he's speaking to somebody, and he seemed very upset, and it seemed to be directly related to the fact that he could not purchase the body armor he was wanting to get, which this, in turn, leads someone to believe that perhaps someone else was helping to pull a string or two behind this puppet. The wife, the ex-wife, quickly came out and talked about how unbalanced and mentally well he was. Well, turns out that she went with him on efforts to try and purchase ammunition, tried to, quote, talk him out of silly ideas. The rumor was floating early on this past week that she might even be charged as an accessory. Well, if she was going with him while he was trying to pick up ammunition and she even had an inkling of what he was up to and she didn't inform authorities, then she is an accessory by definition and should be charged. But hey, since when does breaking the law automatically mean you should go to jail? Hillary Clinton, anybody? This CBS producer who bought an AR-15 and then they transferred it within a couple of hours to some dealer, in essence making it a straw purchase, in essence violating federal law. Well, they wanted to show how easy it would be. But I don't see any of the folks on the left who would very much like to see guns made harder for law-abiding citizens to get seem to be that interested in making sure that the laws that already exist be enforced in this scenario. Because obviously, it was not to make a straw purchase. The intent was to show how easy it could be done. If you are a hardworking, honest American citizen, then in this nation, you should be able to freely purchase firearms. Period. End of that discussion. Making a straw purchase, when you go in and buy for somebody else, that is against the law. And that is something I'm pretty sure, at least every time I went to purchase a gun, I'm pretty sure it was probably to this producer as she went through her 38 minutes of paperwork and whatever else was involved with getting this AR-15 she got. So she did all of this. And now nobody wants to hold her accountable for the fact that they did indeed break the law. The whole while they want to preach to us that there should be more laws. The whole time we explain to them that laws, they don't really stop criminals from doing things. I mean, is there a single thing that we have ever outlawed that it just stopped? Ever? In the history of the world? It continues to boggle my mind. So anyway, let me take this opportunity here as we're heading into the second hour to once again thank everybody who's still with me despite all the technical issues we had earlier. And hopefully we'll be joined shortly by at least one of my guests that was scheduled for today. But I do understand that scheduling conflicts come up, and it is Father's Day. And like I said at the top of the show, I don't think either one of them was thinking about today being Father's Day when they agreed to be on today. Because I know I wasn't thinking about it when I scheduled it. Mark Callahan was supposed to have been on last week, And he had a scheduling conflict then. And, you know, like I've said before, when it comes down to it, if you're a candidate and you're running for office, especially something where you've got to run all across your state and occasionally attend things out of state since it's an actual federal office he's looking to hold, you're pretty busy. And he's balancing that, his candidacy, along with balancing his family life. Because he's married, he's got children, and, you know, it's a big deal to try and get enough time to do all of these things. So hopefully, it's just another scheduling conflict, and hopefully we can still get him on. I know Mark Callahan was supposed to have been on. I hadn't had a chance to go back and check. I didn't get to listen live. He's supposed to have been on the Political Jungle this past week with Tom O'Halloran and Ken Crow. And I know Ken Crow is really excitedly behind Mark Callahan's candidacy. So everything that I've seen and read and heard about him from sources, which include Ken, but from other sources as well, I can see why he's excited about him. Mark really seems to be the kind of guy that we could use a few more of in D.C. If for some reason he can't get on here, then that's fine. I understand. If here in a few minutes Mark Norris gives us a call because he was confused over the Central Time versus Eastern Time, that's fine too. We'll have the conversation with Mark Norris at that point. I just hope that if something works out here, because you know, it's when you have two guests on and you're scheduled like that, you want to give them as much time as they need in order to get their point, get their message out. And in the process, that leaves a lot of filler time. Now, I have stories on standby, and I'm ready to rock and roll with them, but at the same time, I don't want to get into any one of these stories, as I'm sure the rest can get a little carried away. There have been times where I have spent an entire hour on one topic. If it's a really good one and I get going, then that can happen. So I don't want to shortchange one of these important stories that I'd like to get into by having to stop and jump into taking a call. So that's why I'm actually stalling right now. And once I reasonably certain that we're not going to hear from one of the guests, then we'll get into the topics that I had on standby. And in the meanwhile, again, I thank you for your patience. I thank you for your time because it's a big deal. It means a lot to me to know that you're willing to give up part of your Sunday, especially a holiday Sunday, which, you know, it's Father's Day. Or maybe some of you listening in, that doesn't mean quite as much to you as others, but you know, it's still a holiday, and it's still a big deal, and it's usually a family gathering type situation, and so it means a lot to me that you would sacrifice part of that to listen in to me, so thank you. If you're listening to the podcast at Stitcher or Tuned In or iTunes or Blueberry or wherever you may be listening, same applies. Thank you. I can't begin to tell you how much it actually means to me to know that you give up part of your time to, with all the other great hosts that are out there and all the other great shows you could be listening to, that you make my show enough of a priority to you that you listen in. I know I'm pretty selective about what I listen to. And I know there are times where it's harder than other times to get into enough time to listen into these shows that I just, the ones that I want to listen to. So anyway, that being that, so we're about 5 minutes into the next hour. If there was a, confusion over the time difference, then we should hear from Mark Norris here any second. Haven't gotten a response, but I was in contact with Senator Norris through the official Tennessee.gov email address. So that would mean primarily that they're not likely to see an email till tomorrow morning. So not much point in me sending that out just yet. Now I'll probably wait till tomorrow. And hopefully, though, we get some contact. And hopefully we can reschedule both these guys, because I was really excited about talking to both of them. And I promoted it and went out there and made it an event. And so what are you going to do? Right now I'm excited about what Senator Norris is trying to do for the people of Tennessee. So I would very much like to discuss that with him on the air. And I also think that a lot of his efforts can be looked at from what some of the other states are trying to do, who are also fighting the Obama refugee relocation program. So they can see what's going on here. They can emulate the parts that's working here. They can see what parts aren't working and they can get rid of those. You know, you don't have to try to reinvent the wheel. You just have to kind of learn from what other folks are doing. A little bit of networking maybe might be in order. So I really, really, really want to talk with Senator Norris about this. And see, Lady Michelle has joined the chat room. Hello, Michelle. How are you? And Mary has wished me a happy Father's Day, so thank you, Mary. Just, I don't know. I mean, how many more things can you do? You just get so discombobulated when you start off the show with BTR not broadcasting your audio. And that's what happened right off the bat. And who knows, as far as I know, maybe both Senator Norris and Mark Callahan's tried calling in, and they're just not getting through onto the switchboard, because maybe they're trying to use Skype to call in. How long is this Skype issue going to continue? I don't know. Really, just it's just so frustrating. I know I'm far from the only host. Mary said it's been over a week. I think it's, it seems like it's been pretty close to 2 weeks now. Because I think it started somewhere around Wednesday of the week before last. So it's not quite 2 weeks yet, but it's getting pretty close. And what are you going to do? I mean, are they going to give us refunds? Well, as long as the people can hear part of the show, well, then they've done their job, right? Snarl, snarl, hiss. Ooh. All right, anyway. On the off chance that no one joins us at all, which is starting to look that way, and it could just be simply a matter of them still having difficulty calling in, which I wouldn't expect that to be the case. Could be that today being Father's Day, maybe they've even forgotten that they had appointments today. It could be that since neither one of them are in the Eastern time zone, they got confused about what time to call. Could be a lot of reasons. Could be a lot of reasons. But here's the thing. Senator Norris has been fighting the Obama refugee relocation program for a while, almost since the very beginning of its announcement. Been very vocal against it. He's gotten a lot of allies to stand with him on this in both the Tennessee Senate and the Tennessee State House. In fact, I'm tentatively scheduled in early July to have the state representative who's spearheaded the same effort over in the House to join me. And I say tentative because this far out, I certainly don't expect anything to be locked into place. Because as you can see, whether you have technical issues or scheduling conflicts or last-minute hoobie-whatsies, sometimes guests just don't make it on. I was scheduled to have Mark Meckler on several weeks back. He never made it. And when I did follow-up emails, I never heard back. Now, that's very disappointing to me. I mean, if you got to a point where if you got to a point where you you were overbooked and you decided you didn't want to do things on Sundays, you know, whatever that might be, I'm not the kind of guy that holds a grudge. If you were supposed to be a guest, and I know a lot of hosts do, a lot of hosts get very, very upset when guests say, yes, we'll be there. And sometimes they just don't get on. I don't hold a grudge because I know people are busy and things happen. You know, that's just the way it is. In the meanwhile, I'm going to play a little bit of music here while I take a quick break, and then I will be right back. So stay with me, and maybe we can get something resembling the show back on track here soon. Thanks. Callahan. He is a candidate for U.S. Senate for the great state of Oregon, and we're excited to have him with us. First of all, Mark, thanks for being with us today, and hopefully you're having a happy Father's Day.
Yep, sure I am. Thank you for having me on your program there, Tim.
You're more than welcome, and hopefully we'll have a chance to talk to you again as your election gets closer. Because I always like to do follow-up with candidates, especially the candidates that I think stand for what this country needs. And from everything that I've seen and heard so far, I believe you're probably one of those people. But before we get too far into the meat and potatoes of the campaign and what all you're looking to accomplish as a senator, tell the audience a little bit about yourself, especially pre-politics.
Well, I'm 39 years old. I got two daughters, Heather and Sarah. They're 12 and 13 years old. Lots of drama in my house right now. Pretty much swimming in a sea of estrogen here. And basically, I've been a father for about 13 years, and I'm an IT guy by trade. Actually, I went to Oregon State University, graduated there in 2000 with a business degree with a focus in management information systems. So I've been doing IT work, information technology, computer work for the past 16 years. And it's actually developed a mindset that I describe as kind of the troubleshooter or problem solver mindset. And 2009 actually came around, and it got to the point for me where I just had to get off the couch, stop watching TV and complaining, and actually do something about it, because obviously yelling at the TV is not actually doing anything, and TV doesn't really respond back to you yelling at it. So
right.
Basically, I started running for office, and I've ran for some other offices before. I've ran for, when I was living down in Eugene, I ran for county commissioner, and ran for state rep for the state legislature a couple times, and ran for a school board, and a community college board here, and I realized that, I mean, although Oregon is what I refer to as a red state with blue islands, pretty much anything east of the Cascades and anything south of Eugene is conservative. But you have Eugene, you have Portland. They're kind of on the liberal side here in Oregon. And basically, because I currently live in Portland and I grew up in Eugene, it's trying to get elected as a Republican or as a conservative in Eugene or Portland is really difficult. So 2014, I decided to go statewide, and so I decided to run for U.S. Senate. Back then, I was one of the five Republicans in the primary, and I didn't make it through, but I did get some media coverage regarding a endorsement interview that I had at Willamette Week. It, do a Google search for my name and blah, 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 or my name and Willamette Week, you'll probably find it still out there on YouTube. But basically, I was thrown out of a an endorsement interview for defending the honor of a fellow candidate. And got a couple interviews on Fox News regarding it, one with Cavuto, one with Tucker Carlson. And the video, as I said, it went viral, and it's still out there. But I'm not the type of person to give up there, Tim. I even though I didn't make it through the primary in 2014, I'm not the type of person to give up. So I figure I had a lot of name recognition statewide already, so I give it another shot this year. And I'm a fighter, and I'm a troubleshooter, and I'm a problem solver, and I don't give up. So I ran into the primary this year, and I made it through the primary. And here I am today, and we're going to be running to take down Ron Wyden electorally, of course, this November.
All right. So when it comes to your vision, what is it that you think sets you apart, makes you a better choice than the Democrat in the race here?
Well, the Democrat in the race, the current incumbent senator, has been in there for 35 years. And he doesn't really even live in Oregon anymore. He has a $7.5 million townhome in New York City, and he hasn't lived in Oregon for a while. He just can't relate anymore. He's voting wrong. He's definitely voting wrong for what the Republicans believe that he should be voting. But he's also voting wrong for what the Democrats believe he should be voting for also. He's voting against their values. And he's definitely voting against our values as conservatives here too. So it's come to the point where he's been back there for so long, both as a congressman and a senator, that he just can't relate anymore. And I'm 39 years old. I grew up in Oregon. I my family lives in Oregon, and I can relate because I know what Oregon is about, and I don't just pretend to be an Oregon like he does, or Oregonian like he does, for a year and a half around election time just to get reelected and then go back to New York with his family. So I'm just an average guy. I mean, I'm just an average American. I believe that I believe in freedom, and I believe in liberty. And I know what I'm doing. I have two daughters myself, and I'm doing it for them. And I've also accepted the Lord into my heart as my Savior, and I'm doing it for Him. I believe this is God's path for me.
All right. Well, it sounds to me like out there you guys have a Democratic senator that it's a little bit like a certain Democratic senator that we had a little while back down here in Tennessee by the name of Al Gore. I couldn't tell you how long he had been out of the state by the time he finally left the White House. he claimed to be from Tennessee. I don't think he could navigate anywhere in the state without using a map by the time he came back. It's sad to see these people who become career politicians. They completely lose touch with the fact that they're supposed to be in a service industry. They're supposed to be serving the people, the constituency, and it's always troubling to see that this happens, and it seems to happen a lot with folks who are in office just a little too long. So when it comes to that particular topic, what would your stance be on the possibility of changing some current standards and having term limits put in place for the Congress?
Well, I believe in term limits myself. I mean, a lot of people on this table will say, well, we already have term limits. They're called elections. Well, the thing is, our country was not founded to have career politicians in the first place. I mean, as you're probably aware there, Tim, I mean, our country was founded in the fact that there would be people in the community that would be working their businesses or doing what they needed to do in their own communities. And then the community members would come to them and say, it's your turn. And so the people that were basically come to and say, it's your turn, would go up there into Congress or the Senate for 2, 4, 6 years, and then they would come back home, and they would continue to run their businesses. They'd actually have something to come back to. And right now, what you have in our Congress and in our Senate are career politicians like the incumbent that I'm running against that have been in there for 35 years. They live in the or they're so infected with the D.C. bubble back there, what I refer to as the D.C. bubble, that is, they can't relate to who they're actually supposed to be representing. And even if they try, they always send just form letters or form emails back, and it doesn't really answer any questions. And basically, the constituents that they're supposed to be representing pretty much feel blown off. And I've felt blown off for a long time with the representation in Congress that's currently in there. I mean, they're not representing me. They're supposed to be representing all of Oregon. And there's, whether they're Democrat, Republican, independent, non-affiliated, whatever, they're supposed to be representing all of Oregon. And the politicians and the senators and the some of the congressmen in there, they're not representing, especially here in Oregon, they're not representing all of Oregon. They're representing the far left. And there's only one Republican from Oregon. He's from Eastern Oregon. He's a good guy. And I actually met with him when I went back to D.C. this last week. But there's only one Republican from Oregon. The rest of them are just so far left that they're not representing all of Oregon. They're representing the leftist extremist viewpoint, and that's how they're voting. And it's not right. And so it's going to take people like me getting in there, injecting some true conservatism into the Congress, into the Senate, in terms of getting our country back on the right track and taking our country back to the constitutional republic that it was founded to be in the first place.
Well, that is absolutely phenomenal, and you're right. Not only does Oregon need to send you there with that in mind, but the rest of the country needs to send some like-minded senators along with you, and hopefully enough folks over in the House so that that can actually be accomplished. Because one of the biggest things that I have constantly been yammering about, for lack of a better word, is the fact that a lot of us rank and file citizens, regardless of what party we affiliate with, we go on, we complain, we gripe about how bad of a job Congress is doing, and then we just don't send enough people to make a difference, and then we still don't understand why we still have the problems we have. So, yeah, I absolutely agree with your statement there, and I definitely wholeheartedly believe that a conservative message that believes in the Constitution and believes in salvaging the Republic as it was founded would work wonders if we could get enough people like-minded down there.
Exactly.
When it comes to the country, though, rather than just saving the Republic as a general term, if you're elected, what are you doing day one to try and make that happen?
Well, day one, it would probably be some sort of orientation session, but definitely, I'm going in there with three priorities, because I see what's been happening with them and they're not getting done. So the first priority is to full repeal Obamacare, what my team and I call Widencare. I mean, Obamacare, Widencare is not what our country is about. It's socialism, it's evil, it's government overreach to the extreme. And the government was never meant to be in our lives in terms of medical decisions. Medical decisions to be based between a patient and a doctor, that's it. And we've seen over the past 6, 7, 8 years where health insurance premiums have skyrocketed. And that's, I mean, basically we were sold a bill of goods that was passed in the middle of the night. And it's not what our country's about. And it's government control to the extreme. And I personally believe in limited government myself, and the government should not be trying to control, dictate, mandate, and regulate our lives to death here in terms of our own medical care. So that would be day one, or at least first 100 days, because right now the Congress that's currently in there isn't getting the job done in terms of actually repealing it. I know the House has voted, about 30, 40, 50 times regarding repealing Obamacare, but we need to get someone in there that has some guts and someone's actually able to stand up to the political correctness that's basically crippling our nation. And so that would be one of my priorities. The second priority is to lower taxes. I want to lower taxes. I'm in favor of what they refer to as a fair or flat tax. And right now we have a tax system that's 74,000 plus pages long. I mean, it has so many carve-outs and so much cronyism in it that it's basically costing us money just to maintain the regulations in the tax system. So we need to basically reduce the size and scope of the IRS in order to reduce the size and scope of how much we're being taxed, for one, and get back to the principles of limited government. So that's priority number two. Priority number three, and this actually may be priority 2A or priority 1A, is the immigration system. I mean, right now you have a bunch of politicians out there that say, oh, we got to secure the border and stuff like this. You know, well, I don't see the border being secured. I see millions of illegal immigrants coming into our country taking American jobs. I'm the type of person, I believe in America first. America first, it's a very simple concept. You know, we have Americans here, we have our veterans in our streets, and we have our homeless that are being mistreated. In terms of our veterans, we have, I mean, they're basically dying on the waiting list. I'm a child of two naval parents myself. So both my parents were in the Navy. I was raised by my mother, and she taught me the value of honor and integrity and character because of her naval experience. But the point is, in terms of immigration, we need to focus on giving American jobs first to get our economy back on the right track, encourage businesses to repatriate their resources and their funds from overseas in terms of growing our economy so we can have a booming economy like we did in the 80s. And we need to be able to have people that have the resources and funding to be able to take care of their own families on their own, earn what they get because they value it more. And that's the way I was taught. I can tell you when I first started working in the workforce, I was working for McDonald's down in Eugene for $4.75 an hour. And now you have these folks that are out there claiming they're supposedly entitled to $15 an hour. I mean, come on. You know, I did what I could at $4.75 an hour when I first started working back in the 90s. But the point is, we need to get America working again. We need to put America first for American jobs.
Well, absolutely. As an IT guy, as a problem solver, and on the topic of veterans, do you have any ideas where we even start to try and fix the current mess of the VA? Do we just need to scrap it and start over? Do we need to completely privatize? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I haven't actually given that a lot of thought, but I do know what the problem is. As I said, I'm very supportive of our veterans. And I know that if you're going to serve your country and you're going to defend the country, lay your life on the line for your country, then your country needs to pay you back in terms of actually putting out and putting their life on, putting their resources towards your medical care, your well-being, because you're willing to sacrifice your life for the country. So that's just my general value, that basically what I believe. But in terms of actually fixing the problem, right now, I mean, there's so much bureaucracy. We just need to make things more efficient. I know when I solve a computer problem, I look at the problem, I troubleshoot the problem, and the person I'm troubleshooting the problem for doesn't necessarily know about computer problems. I mean, maybe it's Sally in accounting or somebody else that does not have the computer skills to solve computer problems. Well, the way I solve problems, I look at it analytically. And I explain the problem to the user, the end user, in terms that they can understand, like for the knowledge that they have, and I actually empower them to solve their problems also. But in going back to the veterans thing, we need to reduce the bureaucracy. We need to make things more efficient so our veterans are not dying on the waiting list and when they're actually getting the care that they need. And we're not coming up with the VA is not coming up with excuses on why not to treat someone when the veterans should be treated in the first place just as a factor of their own service. Because they served our country, they laid their life on the line for our country. We need to treat them with the utmost priority in terms of treating their needs and their wants and what they need to live if they're willing to lay their life on the line for us.
Well, that is that's very well put, sir. And yep. I wish people would better understand the very concept that our government made promises to these men and women for the sacrifices they made. And there doesn't seem to be much value in a promise from the folks in D.C. anymore. But if there is going to be one group in this nation that you're going to keep a promise for, it should be our veterans, because they have literally risked everything, many of them coming back broken. The least we can do, the very least we can do, is take care of these folks, because they stood a post. They did the things that other people didn't want to do so they could stay home and enjoy the freedoms that we're blessed with, and unfortunately seem all too ready to just give away in many cases. But Yeah, it is definitely case. I love hearing the fact that you want to apply problem solving analytically, regardless of what the problem is. Because that seems to be one of the biggest problems we face in modern politics right now. Nobody wants to play on emotion. Nobody wants to deal with facts. And that's what we need more of. And more so than just being willing to focus on that, we also need somebody who can better communicate that fact. So much of the current National Republican Party, the office holders in particular, they run scared from a challenge because they're almost afraid to simply verbalize the argument. So hopefully
it's a political correctness that's infected our nation. I mean, we as Americans, we're walking on eggshells now. I mean, we're so afraid of someone being quote unquote offended and quote unquote being sued or something like that for saying something wrong. I mean, there's the entitlement mindset, and then there's basically this political correctness that has crippled our country. We're Americans here. We're tough. Our country was not founded upon victims. Our country was founded upon people that wanted to build a country based upon freedom, based upon liberty, based upon our Constitution. And we need to get back to that, because as long as we continue to let political correctness infect our nation is not going to be strong. So we need to eliminate this whole political correctness stuff in terms of getting our country back on the right track to freedom and liberty, and not be concerned so much about offending people. We're tough as Americans, and we need to start acting like it.
Absolutely. I love hearing people say that. Now, speaking of being tough, let's look at national security real quick, and then we'll start winding down the interview. As far as national security is concerned, what do you see as the biggest issues there?
Well, right now we have ISIS going around cutting off heads of Christians, and I'm a Christian myself, and I certainly don't want my head cut off. So I can sympathize with the Christians out there that are being persecuted. I mean, even in our own country, they're, as I said, going back to the political correctness thing, Christians are being persecuted based upon their Christian views about, I don't know, we have a baker here in Oregon that were persecuted for their Christian views for not wanting to make a cake. I actually met Aaron and Melissa Klein, and they're great folks, very great folks. They're God-fearing Christians, and they're great folks, and they make great cupcakes too. But the point is, We have this political correctness, and then it's also infecting our national security stances. But we should not be letting ISIS go around. We should be actually taking the fight to them and destroying them, because they can't be going around religiously persecuting Christians. And in terms of other national security, we shouldn't let Iran have the bomb, for one. You know, we shouldn't be negotiating deals with Iran of people that want to kill us and they want to destroy Israel. I know my opponent, Ron Wyden, basically voted for the Iran deal, and that's going to put our nation's security at risk. So I'm against the Iran deal myself, and because it's not something that's going to benefit Americans, it's not going to be something that keeps us safe. The number one job of our country, of our government, is to keep Americans safe, and this Iran deal is not going to keep Americans safe. So in terms of other national security issues, what other issues are you referring to there, Tim?
Well, primarily, I was referring to whatever you thought would be of most focus for you as an Oregonian, knowing that you do have coastal port cities, knowing that outside threats can affect your state and then therefore the country. Just whatever it is that you believe that you see for yourself needs to be addressed by the Congress before it's too late. If the Iran deal, obviously a very good legitimate example of our current administration basically thumbing their nose at the American people and the safety of the world, admitting that, knowing that you giving up these funds in fact would actually help accelerate their nuclear program and practically guarantees the export of terrorism, we need to address that. But
as far as
Obama's refugee relocation program, I don't know how much Oregon has been affected by that, but I know every state in the union is having to deal with it. Your thoughts on that?
Well, we shouldn't be relocating refugees. I mean, we're basically just importing terrorists, in my opinion. And I know some of these folks that are coming in as refugees are not terrorists. I can't make a blanket statement that they are. But the point is, there should be some sort of screening process. I mean, I think it was Brennan that came out the other day saying that there is no way to screen these people. So, well, how do we know we're not importing terrorists? You know, how do we know we're not importing people with diseases that we eventually have to be faced with, and that our social services system has to be faced with, and it's going to consequently affect our economy in terms of having to deal with the influx of all these people that may be coming in with the diseases, that may be terrorists, that may need, or that are basically competing with Americans for jobs. And so, I'm against that myself in terms of importing refugees. I know the liberals here in the state of Oregon have basically agreed to our unelected governor, Corrupt Kate is what I call her, but our unelected governor here has basically agreed to import the Syrian, or allow the Syrian refugees to be relocated here. But yeah, we shouldn't be doing that, because we need to focus on giving Americans jobs first in terms of building our economy with Americans, rather than allowing refugees to come in and compete for American jobs, bring in who knows what disease, and then possibly importing terrorists as well.
Right. I mean, in my mind, it's just this simple. There were a magnitude of places much closer to home for the Syrians that had space, room, and facilities where they could have been kept safe and could have been helped. These places typically were Muslim nations, Saudi Arabia being a prime example, where they literally had camps set up, but not one single person was allowed in. You wouldn't have the culture shock going from being Muslim primarily, which a lot of these folks are. And as Brendan pointed out, and you just did, rightfully so, the screening process is non-existent. There is no real screening process. The majority, the overwhelming majority of these folks may be just honest people trying to get away from the violence in their homeland. But if even just one or two are terrorists ready to kill infidels in the name of ISIS, we've done our nation a huge disservice. And we've done them a disservice, because we didn't help take them away from the violence. We just allowed them to bring the violence with them. And that doesn't help anything.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. So at this point, how is the campaign itself going? Your internal numbers looking good, feeling good about the way the momentum of the campaign's going?
Well, we have some great momentum, yes. I actually just returned from D.C. this last week. I flew out there this last Sunday and came back Thursday. Met with several acronym organizations, NRA, NRSC, ACU, and NFIB. And I also actually had in-person private meetings with three actual sitting senators from other states, being that the two senators from my state, one of them I'm running against, obviously, but then the other one doesn't really listen either. So basically, I went back to D.C., met with some folks, and so we have some great momentum right now, but my two priorities when I was back in D.C. and what will continue to be my two priorities are funding and endorsements. So I actually had the unique and almost kind of surprising results in the primary. There was four of us in the primary, ran against three other honorable gentlemen. And I actually won the primary with 124,000 votes in the state of Oregon here, Republican primary, and I spent the least amount of money. I spent under $10,000. So basically, we need funding, because Ron Wyden, my opponent, has raised about $9 million, and obviously I'm not going to be able to compete with that without having a little bit more funding. So I'm always looking for funding. And I'm always looking for endorsements as well. And I was hoping that your audience or the conservative crowd here would help me out, because, I mean, I'm going to be one of 100 people in the Senate, but I'm also going to have a vote in terms of putting forward the direction of the country. So I'm going to contribute to the direction of the country. So I am looking for both funding and endorsements, both inside of Oregon as well as outside of Oregon. And I was hoping that your audience could help me out in terms of at least funding to be able to compete competitively with Ron White. And I know we have a June 30th FEC report coming up here at the end of the month, and a lot of people are going to be looking at my report in terms of determining if we can be competitive in November, and I want to make that report look good. So I'd appreciate if your audience could help me out in terms of funding, as a both living inside of Oregon and outside of Oregon as well.
All right. So if somebody listening to the show did want to make a campaign contribution for you, that be at CallahanForOregon.com. Best place to go about that?
Yep, www.CallahanForOregon.com. They can also just mail me. I do still have a mailing address. It's P.O. Box 651, and that's in Fairview, Oregon, F-A-I-R-V-I-E-W, Oregon, 97024. And they can just send me something in the mail, or I can do the online donation at the CallahanForOregon.com.
All right. And, of course, if folks want to follow the campaign on Facebook or Twitter, you have that available as well, correct?
Yep. My Facebook page is facebook.com/ Callahan for Oregon, CallahanForOregon.com. My Twitter handle is the @ and then Callahan, the number 4, and then the word Oregon. So CallahanForOregon, and then the number 4, and then Oregon.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And first of all, Mark, I wish you all the luck. You definitely sound to me like the kind of guy we need more of in D.C., and it sounds like Oregon would be fortunate to be able to call you their U.S. Senator. For everybody who is listening, especially if you catch the show in the podcast later on, if you're finding us in the archives, I do have links in the show description for those websites, and to his Facebook and Twitter account as well. So feel free to follow those and let Mark know how you feel. And if you don't mind, go ahead and let him know that you heard it here, so that he knows you didn't waste a big chunk of his Father's Day Sunday here just talking to me. Thanks, Mark. I do appreciate your time, and I do wish you the best of luck.
Well, thank you very much, Tim. I do apologize for coming on a little bit late. Had some church things going on today, but I do appreciate being on your show today.
Well, I appreciate the apology, but there's really no reason to apologize for. As far as I'm concerned, when you're coming on the show, you're doing me a favor too. You help to get the message out, and anybody who's helping to get the conservative message out, I am more than happy to have on. And if you're running a little late, like I said to you earlier, I'm well aware of the time constraints that are involved with the campaign and family life. And when you're throwing church in the mix too, where do you have time to do much else? So again, I just appreciate you being here.
Well, thank you, Tim. I hope you have a great day, and I hope you have a great Father's Day as well.
Thank you, sir. God bless. Hopefully we'll be able to talk again on air a little bit closer to election time.
Sounds good. Sounds good.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was Mark Callahan. He is, of course, running for U.S. Senate here. Well, not here, but out in the great state of Oregon. And I don't know about you guys, but I felt a level of sincerity there that I like. The fact that he has run for office before, he's determined, he seems to be fighting the good fight, and he's fighting the good fight just to get to where he's at. You know, a lot of people will run for office one time, and if they're not successful, they walk away from it. I mean, I have heard candidates before, I've had them on this show before, talk about how they felt God had led them to do this. And in some cases, maybe they feel like they accomplished what God's task was, just by getting the issues talked about. And I know that to be the case with a couple of folks. But, you know, to me, it seems like if you feel like you're being led to run for an office so that you can be a voice and be a leader, that you don't stop just because the voters weren't convinced yet. You keep going. And seems like Mark is doing exactly that. We all know that Oregon could use a few more conservative faces representing them. As Mark said, that Oregon has a lot of conservatives within their borders. It's just the larger, more rural areas, more urban areas within the state tend to be a bit bluer. And so that makes it difficult for some conservatives to have their voice heard. If you could get some conservative senators from states that are generally thought of as being predominantly blue, that goes a long way towards evening the playing field for good, honest, old-fashioned American values and that return to the Congress. All right. Again, here we are. We've had the conversation now. We weren't able to speak with Tennessee State Majority Leader Mark Norris today, but hopefully in the very near future, we'll be able to reschedule and get him back on air. We were able to talk with Mark Kelly, and I think it was a pretty good conversation. I think he had an opportunity to really get some information out, and like I said, do have links in the show description for CallahanForOregon.com and also Facebook link and Twitter link are available in the show description as well. If you like what you heard, if you think Mark is a good choice and you want to support somebody that is in fact going to be conservative and bring forth a conservative message from the people to the career politicians in D.C. who are a little out of touch, you want to help him out, please check out CallahanForOregon.com. Either follow the electronic links to make a contribution or you can mail to the address that he lists here. I would imagine you can probably find that same address on his website if you still would prefer to send an old-fashioned check. Now, there's still some of y'all out there doing that. I'm seriously considering probably making a contribution myself. I've read a lot about Mark, and I've heard a lot about Mark from some folks that I think know what they're talking about, folks that I trust. And while I don't feel it's necessarily my role as a show host, especially from several states away, to endorse a candidate, I definitely feel comfortable saying that Mark Callahan is a much better choice for U.S. Senate than his Democratic rival. And you know as well as I do, in the battle of money, cash flow is huge. So, unless you're just completely tapped out or you're already overextended with supporting closer to home candidates, please consider possibly helping Mark out. And like I said, if you don't mind, if you heard this here and you're convinced because of here, if you don't mind, let them know that you heard it here on Tap Into the Truth and that it was his appearance here that helped bring him whatever donations, contributions you guys decide to give. Because I've decided that I need to make more connections with my show to the candidates because I've had a lot of candidates on and we've had no real way to kind of verify how much that has helped or hasn't. Of course, not every candidate outing has been a good one, but we've had candidates from all across the country. Those of you who are longtime listeners know that. I've had some local folks. I've had some folks from California. I've had some folks from Illinois, from Ohio. It's well, thank you, Mary. Mary in the chat room says that I'm a good interviewer. Well, I know I've got questions that I want asked, and I think most of the listeners want to hear, and a lot of these questions you'll probably hear other people ask too. So sometimes I'm fumbling for the best way to word it. So I still think my interviewing skills have some work to do. And unfortunately, I don't have guests on here on a regular enough basis that I feel completely comfortable with it. Because, I mean, you guys know Mary and Michelle, you ladies in particular. I know you folks in the chat room right now. You know that I go these long stints and I'll have one or two guests on for several weeks in a row. And then I'll go sometimes months without a guest on. And you're only hearing me doing the monologues and what I picked out for the segments and what was the outrage of the week and what was the headline you might have missed. And when I go those long stints, while I've gotten smoother and better at doing the interviews during those long months away, I come back and it's like, okay, now, should I put it that way? Should I say it another way? But I appreciate the compliment, Mary, and thank you. I do try to make sure that the important questions get asked without any of those gotcha moments. Because again, like I was saying, I recognize the fact that when a guest comes on, they're doing me a favor just as much as I'm doing them one and helping them to get their message out. Now, that is the idea, the mutual beneficial thing. I know a lot of hosts don't see it that way. Like I was saying before I took the short break, as Mark was calling in, so I was checking and verifying and, you know, all that call screening stuff that, since I'm my own producer and don't get much help very often here, that I have to go and do away from the mic. It still comes down to understanding that, you know, it really is a case of I'm not going to hold any grudges. If you can't make it on, that's fine. I understand, because I do see it as you're doing me a favor just as much as I'm doing you. You help bring, by coming on my show as a guest, you're helping to bring a level of legitimacy to this show. You're helping to elevate the quality of the show, presumably. You're helping to elevate how respected the show is going to be. And the bigger name the guest is, the more respected the show will become. And then hopefully, so will the host. You know, it doesn't always work that way. And on a show like today, where we started out with all the tech issues, oh my goodness gracious, I'm going to have to get in here and edit some audio and change things. And it's going to come out kind of short. And there's a lot of things that I want kept on the broadcast, even though we were scheduled to have other things. And now there's really not much time for me to get into any of the other topics. So we will save all of the pertinent topics that I absolutely, positively must discuss this week, and may actually do a broadcast some point through the week if I can finagle enough family approval, because that's typically the only reason why I'm broadcasting this once a week. I love broadcasting. It's therapeutic for me, and I love the fact that I do get to have these conversations with a multitude of people. I would be looking to do some later time-slotted broadcasts throughout the week. If I could find one that wasn't directly in competition with some of the other hosts here at BTR that do such a great job, and that I really feel like you probably should be listening to their show instead of mine anyway. And if I could sneak up enough family time and build up enough points that, okay, well, now you can go do that because it's not interfering with family time. It's hard to do, though. It's hard to do. I mean, I still have teenage kids living at home, and that's the most challenging time, as I'm sure those of you who have been parents recall. It's rough when they're little, but it's so much fun. And as they continue to get older, it continues to get harder, and there continues to be less and less fun. So that's the stage where I'm at now. But I wouldn't trade it for anything, and I certainly don't want to sound so negative, and I need to get back on point. That's just a terrible Father's Day message for me to be sending as a father. So I take it back. Anyway, we will work on getting the Senate Majority Leader for the Tennessee State Senate, Mark Norris, back on the show at another time. Well, actually, I guess I shouldn't say back on the show. We'll work on getting him on the show at a later date. Because it really is vital, I think, for people to understand not only what Senator Norris is doing in trying to fight the Obama refugee relocation program, but how he's trying to get the citizens of the state involved. In fact, he's floating a petition right now. And I'm going to go ahead and leave the link to that in the show description, even though I'm obviously going to have to edit today's show's description a little bit later in order to reflect the fact that Senator Norris did not join us today. But I'm going to leave the keeptnsafe.com link available so that if you happen to be a citizen of the state of Tennessee, you can sign the petition as Senator Norris has, along with some other folks, have started this petition to try and make it clear to the state government, and in particular the state attorney general, that the citizens want the state to sue the administration in an effort to try and prevent the fast-tracked refugees from being placed here in the state of Tennessee. I want him to have the opportunity to speak for himself and saying why he's dedicated to this cause, because it is something that he's been beat up in the press about. He's been beat up in the press because, of course, the press is mostly liberal, and they want you to believe that it's the American thing to do, or it's the Christian thing. And I love when the left lecture us on Christianity, what is or isn't the Christian thing to do. But anyway, he's fighting this fight in order to try and protect the citizens of Tennessee from the one or two potential terrorists. He's not out here calling all these people terrorists. Much like Mark Callahan earlier discussed, we know that there's one or two in there that if they're not terrorists, they might be moved to become terrorists because we can't vet them properly. And Barack this week has pledged via executive order that he's going to expedite and speed up the process of bringing some of these people inside our borders. This is something that we need to be concerned about no matter what state you're in, because it's hitting all across the country. So for those of you listening that are outside of the state of Tennessee, now would be a good time for you to find out what your state legislations are doing to try and combat this. Some of you, unfortunately, are probably living in a state where it's been greenlit, where they're not trying to fight it, where the majority of your legislatures are on board with bringing the Syrian refugees and refugees from other parts of the world too, by the way. There was an incident just this past week at a Walmart where a workplace violence issue took place. Hostages were taken. The individual that actually did this was a Muslim refugee from Somalia. Seems that the mayor of the city in question has been trying unsuccessfully for several months now to get some type of relief from an inundation of refugees being shipped to their town. It'll only get worse if we don't make our voices heard. So find out where your senators and your representatives are at and try to get some answers. Hold these people accountable. Under 90 seconds left for the broadcast today. So again, allow me this opportunity to thank Mark Callahan for being on air and for giving us such a great interview, giving us some insight into his mind and his vision for both Oregon and for America. I want to thank everybody in the chat room today. I see I've got a guest in there at the moment, and Michelle's still there, and Mary's still there. I only missed half. The rest had no audio. So, yes, Mary, I know. BTR, because everything stayed greenlit the whole time. Everything that I did, nothing changed on any of my boards, so it had to be something to do with BTR, unless it was some crazy internet connection issue between here and there. That's about the only thing I can think of, but that would have been outside of my studio too. So there's not much more I could have done. But thank you for sticking with me and for helping me out with that too, Mary. I do appreciate it very much. Ladies and gentlemen, don't take my word for it. Definitely, definitely, Don't take their word for it. Take a little time and be prepared to put in a little bit of effort if you really want to tap into the truth. Have a great week, everybody, and hopefully I'll be back next week and you'll hear an entire show. See you then.
Heartbreak, but it was-